Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 7th. Chaos at the Capitol. Cud. We are charging the Capitol. Former Midland mayoral candidate among protesters at U.S. Capitol. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Former mayoral candidate Jenny Cudd was among the protesters that made their way into the U.S. Capitol building Wednesday afternoon, as some breached the floors of the House and Senate, causing lawmakers to be evacuated. Quote, "We are charging the Capitol," Cudd posted on Facebook at about 1:30 p.m. Wednesday. Cudd said in a broadcast later in the day that the charging of the U.S. Capitol followed news that Vice President Mike Pence betrayed us by not being willing to exercise his power. End quote. Quote, "When Pence betrayed us is when we decided to storm the Capitol," Cudd said afterward. Cudd talked about pushing and pushing to get into the Capitol, and when they were inside, she said, she and the other patriots knocked down Nancy Pelosi's door, and that someone stole the House Speaker's gavel. About an hour earlier, a live video showed Cudd and fellow Midlander Elio Rosa walking from the White House to the Capitol following President Donald Trump's speech to the protesters. Cudd said they were about 3 miles from the Capitol at the time of the video, and they were meeting the Proud Boys there. She said in the video there were, quote, "lots of armed patriots among those marching, and she was wearing a bulletproof sweatshirt." In a message to the Reporter Telegram, Cudd said a teenage girl was shot in the neck by police inside the Capitol building. Reports indicated that a person shot during the event later died. Quote, "I don't know if you have heard about the shot that rang out throughout the world, but that was it, and I am not blank joking around," Cudd said during her broadcast afterward. "One of our own got shot at the Capitol, and the patriots are furious," end quote. Weary from the long day and tear gas and batons she said were used on her and others at the Capitol, Cudd talked about being part of the 3% willing to fight for her country. She also offered choice words for the Republican Party. Protesters marched to Capitol Hill as Congress was debating the Electoral College results of the presidential election. A dozen senators and over 100 GOP House members vowed to contest the results during a joint session of Congress that was scheduled to certify the election. Pence and some congressional leaders were evacuated and taken to undisclosed locations, while others in the Capitol building said they were sheltering in place. The National Guard, FBI, SWAT team, and Department of Homeland Security officers were deployed to Capitol Hill, according to news reports. Cudd said in the live Facebook video that she and Rosa were aware violence had broken out at the Capitol as they marched toward the building. Quote, "This time it's us," she said. "This time it's the pissed-off patriots," end quote. Trump posted a video on Twitter shortly after 3 p.m. in which he repeated unproven allegations of election fraud but told protesters to leave the Capitol building. Quote, "You have to go home now," he said in the video. "We have to have peace," end quote. Pioneer CEO still sees slow U.S. oil output recovery. The story was written by David Weith of Bloomberg. One of the top producers in America's shale patch doesn't see drilling picking up significantly, even after this week's surprise Saudi pledge production sent prices surging. Quote, "I really don't see much increase in the Permian Basin or the U.S. shale over the next several years," said Scott Sheffield, chief executive officer of Pioneer Natural Resources Company. U.S. oil output is expected to remain roughly flat at about 11 million barrels a day for the next several years, Sheffield said Wednesday in an investor webcast hosted by Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated. Meanwhile, two of the nation's largest shale regions, North Dakota's Bakken and the Eagle Ford in Texas, may never see growth again, the CEO said. Although the U.S. crude benchmark jumped above $50 a barrel this week for the first time since February, after Saudi Arabia said it will cut output in the next 2 months, Sheffield said that Pioneer's current production plans are unchanged. Quote, I never anticipate growing above 5% under any conditions, Sheffield said. Even if oil went to $100 a barrel and the world was short of supply, the economics wouldn't support adding rigs because service costs would cut into margins, he said. The CEO predicted more industry consolidation could occur this year if oil stays above $50 a barrel, allowing companies to improve balance sheets. While Pioneer is focused on completing its recent acquisition of Parsley Energy Incorporated, the door isn't closed to other acquisition opportunities in the Permian Basin, he said. The company had considered buying closely held Endeavor Energy Resources LP, but decided a deal couldn't be done. Quote, anything else we would look at after bringing in Parsley has got to be double-digit accretion that's got to be in the Permian Basin, he said. The chances of doing deals like that are slim, end quote. Midland's sales tax collections continued downward spiral. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. If one believes sales tax collections for the city and county are economic indicators for an area, then the Texas Comptroller offered bad news this week. Sales tax collections fell to 2017 levels this month. The Comptroller's office reported a city collection of $3.01 million, which is the smallest collection going back to June 2017, and a 27% decrease from January 2020. It was the second straight month that the city experienced a 30-plus percent decrease year over year. The trends also now include declines of 20% plus during 7 of the last 8 months, double-digit percentage declines during 10 of the last 12 months, and declines from each of the last 13 months. The county was hit even harder. The $2.5 million collected was a 38% decrease from January 2020, but if one goes back to January 2019, the collection is down 48%. The county's 2017 collection was $2.5 million. The collection was the county's second near 50% collection decline to start the fiscal year. In December, the comptroller reported a 49% decrease. Reporter Telegram records show the January collection was the 16th straight collection that the county showed a decrease compared to the same month in a previous year. January's collection is based on November sales.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read two more articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, Thursday, January 7th. Number of COVID cases in Midland tops 14,000, by Stuart Doreen. The number of total COVID cases during the pandemic surpassed 14,000 in Midland County. The Midland Health Department reported that another 138 cases were reported Tuesday. That increased the total of unconfirmed cases to 425 this week, and the total number of unconfirmed and unconfirmed cases during the pandemic to 14,022. The health department reported Wednesday that it has caught up on confirming cases through the end of last week. There also is a patch of unconfirmed cases from November. Otherwise, health department staff indicated they have confirmed that those reported to have tested positive have been contacted and they have confirmed residency of those people inside Midland County. Along the latest case milestone having been reached, the city of Midland also reported another two deaths Wednesday. That brings the total announced to 7 this week and 192 during the pandemic. Those passing away were a woman in her 40s and a man in his 60s. Both were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, and both were reported to have underlying health conditions. The man passed away on January 1st, the woman on Wednesday. Other notables from Wednesday included the percentage of COVID-19 patients compared to total patients at Midland Memorial Hospital dropped to 27%, while percentage of COVID patients at hospitals across the Midland region rose to 12.61%. Although the percentage across the region is below 15%, it has increased for five straight days. The percentage of COVID rooms filled with patients fell to 82%, which was below the seven-day average of 86%. Midland Health reported 92% of the hospital's 295 total rooms, COVID and otherwise, were occupied, which was well above the seven-day average, 82%. The percentage of those people testing positive at Midland Health testing centers this week increased to 31.3%. Also, the number of positive tests climbed to 208. The total this week is exactly half of the 416 positive cases reported last week. Should this percentage this week remain at or above 31%, it would set a record for positivity during the pandemic. Chance of snow back in the forecast? Associated Press. The National Weather Service is reporting on its website that there is a chance of snow coming back to Midland. The National Weather Service is again calling for a chance of snow on Saturday night and then again before noon Sunday. The chance of precipitation is 30% on Saturday night. Colder weather is expected to move into the area late Saturday night and early Sunday. High temperatures will go from the lower 50s Saturday to the lower 40s Sunday, and the low Sunday night will fall into the lower 20s, according to the National Weather Service. The National Weather Service reported 4.8 inches fell at Midland International Airport on December 30th and 31st.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 7, 2021. 30 years of service. MISD Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon presents outgoing board member James Fuller with an American flag on Monday to commemorate 30-plus years serving on the Midland School Board. Permian Basin Area Foundation opened scholarship application for the 2021-22 academic year. Permian Basin Area Foundation is pleased to announce the opening of the 2021-2022 scholarship cycle. Students and counselors may view eligibility and selection criteria for more than 80 scholarships through the application platform, Academic Works, which can be accessed through the Permian Basin Area Foundation website, pbaf.org. The application deadline is March 31. Though the foundation was unable to host their annual scholarship dinner, Permian Basin Area Foundation awarded more than $700,000 in scholarships to area students during the last academic year. The foundation anticipates awarding more than $500,000 for the 2021-22 academic year. These awards are made possible by numerous donors to the foundation's scholarship funds in support of local students pursuing higher education. To learn more about scholarships, grants, and the philanthropic work of donors partnering with Permian Basin Area Foundation, visit pbaf.org or call 617-3213. Know a member of the military coming home? Military families can call 352-0785 or email Vicki Gomez, ZEMOGV at cable1.net. When they know their member of the military is flying into Midland International Airport, so the Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee can be there to greet them. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present and former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167, Honor Our Troops, 889-0177, Real Thanks, 528-6633, Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084, Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511, Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458, Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program. 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate health care option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Large item pickup. For residential customers, the City of Midland will pick up furniture and appliances at no additional charge. These items must be placed in the alley in the city right-of-way. The city will not go onto private property. Do not place your item next to the dumpster. It needs to be behind your home in the alley. These larger item collections must be scheduled with the Solid Waste Division. Please call 685-7278 to schedule the service. Source, City of Midland.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 7th. Eddie L. Johnson, age 69, passed away Friday, December 11th in Big Spring. Private family services will be at a later date. He was born March 6, 1951, in Lubbock, Texas, to Ed and Lenora Johnson. Survivors include a sister, Karen Pearson, and husband Greg of Granbury, formerly of Midland, one brother, Jimmy Johnson of Port Arthur, several grandchildren, and many first and second cousins. He was preceded in death by his parents and by his son, Aaron Scott Johnson, sister-in-law, Cheryl Johnson, and a niece, Deborah Johnson. The family suggests memorials to Salvation Army or local food bank. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Herbert F. Bowles, beloved husband, father, uncle, and grandfather, departed this world on December 11th to be reunited with his dearly departed wife, Norma Jean Hubbard Bowles. Bud, as he was known by many, was born in Canadian, Texas, on December 29, 1926, to Floyd Bowles and Sybil Henderson Bowles, and passed away in Midland, Texas. In Midland, he met his beloved wife, Norma Jean Hubbard. They were married 57 years until her passing on August 8, 2011. Bud and Norma were blessed with sons Bob and Greg and daughter Kathy. He is preceded in death by his son Gregory H. Bowles and older brother Dr. Truett C. Bowles. Bud loved his family and is survived by his son Robert O. Bowles and his wife Erin Bowles of Dallas and daughter Kathy Bowles Anderson and her husband Mike Anderson of Dallas and four grandchildren. He is also survived by a nephew, Dr. Chris Bowles, and family of Bedford, Massachusetts, a niece, Dr. Rebecca Bowles of Arlington, Texas, brother-in-law, Orban J. Hubbard, and wife, Bonnie Hubbard of Midland, and several nieces. The family would like to express their heartfelt thanks to T.J. Pickett, Dr. Michael Miller and staff, and caregivers who have been a constant source of support. Condolences may be offered at www.npwelch.com. Jack Rosvang Nielsen, age 59, from Midland, passed away on December 31st. He was born in Copenhagen, Denmark, and raised in Vancouver, British Columbia. He met his wife, Diana Garcia Nielsen, and then married in February 1985. He is survived by his wife, Diana, and two daughters, Jackie Nielsen of San Antonio, Jessica Jackson, and husband Dion Jackson, and several grandchildren. He is also survived by a son, Jack Anthony Nielsen of Vancouver, British Columbia, sister and brother-in-law Ann Lee and Doug Grimson, and nephew Ryan Grimson and niece Nicola Reimer of Abbotsford, British Columbia. He is preceded in death by his parents, George and Inger Nielsen. A memorial service will be held at a later date. A memorial celebration of life for Jose Rubio Rodella. who died on December 19th. We invite you to join us as we say goodbye to our beloved brother, Jose, who will be laid to rest on Friday, January 8th, at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. There will be a graveside service at 1 p.m. In addition to his family, friends are welcome to pay their final respects. We look forward to seeing you there. Thomas Buttrell Leary passed away peacefully in Midland on December 30th. A funeral mass will be held on January 5th at St. Mary's Catholic Church for family in Marathon, Texas at 1 p.m., with graveside immediately following at the Marathon, Texas Cemetery for friends and family. Tom was born on the Buttrell Ranch in Brewster County, Texas, on September 18, 1925. Tom met and married Mary Ann Russell on April 30, 1949, in San Angelo. The couple moved back to the Buttrell Ranch in 1954 with sons Mike, Pat, and Tim. A fourth son, Kevin, was born in 1963. He was preceded in death by his grandparents, Lucius Featherstone Buttrell and Margaret Buttrell, parents Francis Thomas and Lou Anna Leary, and his wife of 54 years, Mary Ann Russell Leary. Tom is survived by his brother Jim Leary and family of Lubbock, Texas, and four sons, Mike and wife Sheila Leary of Austin, Pat and wife Judy Leary of Granbury, Tim and wife Roxanne Leary of Marathon, Kevin and wife Salem Leary of Midland. Tom is also survived by 11 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. The family asks that, in lieu of flowers, please send donations to Marathon Cemetery Association, Post Office Box 431, Marathon, Texas, 79842, or B Hospice. Services were entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home of Alpine, Texas. Online condolences may be made at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Zena K. Morse, age 78, of Midland, passed away on January 3rd in Odessa. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 9th, at Homeline Baptist Church, 3500 Annetta Drive in Midland, with Pastor Rob Foreman officiating. Seating will be partially limited due to COVID-19, and COVID-19 protocols will be in place. The service will be streamed live online at homelinebaptistchurch.com. Zena Kay was born in Big Spring, Texas, to Woner and Lily Robinson on May 15, 1942. She married Lloyd Morse on November 20, 1970. She operated a ceramic business out of her home for many years. Zena Kay is survived by her husband, Lloyd Morse, children Steve Morse and wife Bonnie of San Marcos, Texas, Terry Wayland of Abilene, Texas, Mark Morse and wife Monica of Midland, Tiffany Grant and husband Jerry of Brownwood, Texas, Charles Morse of Midland, and Joe Wayland of Midland, several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Memorial by check only to Midland County Sheriff's Department, Mounted Patrol Unit, 400 South Main, Midland, Texas, 79701, or to one's favorite organization. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, please sign our guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Sterling Maverick Ritchie, 23 months old, of Midland, was called home to be in the perfect hands of her Heavenly Father on Wednesday, December 30th. Her celebration of life was held on Monday, January 4th, at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church, with burial following at Trinity Memorial Park in Big Spring. Sterling was born on January 23rd, 2019, to Lacey and Matt Ritchie of Midland. She is survived by her parents, Lacey and Matt Ritchie of Midland, grandparents Jimmy and Teresa Sterling of Vincent, grandparents Mike and Robin Ritchie of Big Spring, great-grandmothers Lucille Sterling of Vincent, Leona Turner of Kerrville, and Joanne Ritchie of Big Spring, aunts and uncles Tara and William Renfro of Vincent, Karen and Ryan Reshichar of Vincent, and Reagan and Nate Bayless of Decatur, cousins Riley Turtle and Reagan Renfro of Vincent, Ty and Bay Reshichar of Vincent, and Turner, Tagan, and Truett Bayless of Decatur. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Big Spring. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. Front page. Stop the spread, wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Chaos at the Capitol. Trump supporters try to break through a police barrier Wednesday at the Capitol in Washington. Julio Cortez, the Associated Press. Trump supporters gesture to U.S. Capitol Police in the hallway outside of the Senate chamber at the Capitol Wednesday in Washington. Manuel Balse-Sineta, the Associated Press. One dead, National Guard activated. From AP and staff reports. Washington. A violent mob loyal to President Donald Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday and forced lawmakers into hiding in a stunning attempt to overturn America's presidential election, undercut the nation's democracy, and keep Democrat Joe Biden from replacing Trump in the White House. The nation's elected representatives scrambled to crouch under desks and don gas masks while police futilely tried to barricade the building, one of the most jarring scenes ever to unfold in a seat of American political power. A woman was shot and killed inside the Capitol, and Washington's mayor instituted an evening curfew in an attempt to contain the violence. The rioters were egged on by Trump, who has spent weeks falsely attacking the integrity of the election and had urged his supporters to descend on Washington Wednesday to protest Congress' formal approval of Biden's victory. Some Republican lawmakers were in the midst of raising objections to the results on his behalf when the proceedings were abruptly halted by the mob. Together, the protests and the GOP election objections amounted to an almost unthinkable challenge to American democracy. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said lawmakers were resuming the counting of electoral votes Wednesday evening after the Capitol was cleared of the pro-Trump occupiers. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said lawmakers were resuming the counting of electoral votes Wednesday evening after the Capitol was cleared of the pro-Trump occupiers. Newly sworn in U.S. Representative August Pfluger, R. Texas, was reached by phone in a secure location Wednesday afternoon. Pfluger represents District 11, which includes Odessa. He had been in the Capitol all day Wednesday and said members of his team from Odessa and Midland were currently safe. "We are safe and in a secure location. We're just absolutely completely disappointed with the way this is happening, going down," Pfluger said. "We had just started the proceedings, and the Capitol is in lockdown right now, so absolutely condemn the violence. This has gone well beyond our First Amendment rights to peaceably assemble. That's not who we are. That's not the kind of country we are. We were here today to debate, to protect, support, defend the Constitution, and the Constitution is very clear on this one," he said. He added that they saw this throughout the summer with Antifa and racial justice protests. Pfluger said he condemned them then and is condemning them now. "Breaching the Capitol is not the way to have your voice heard while we're trying to get our message across in a constitutionally protected way," he said. He didn't know, as of about 3 p.m. Wednesday, how long the siege would last. "But we're urging everyone to peacefully disperse, continue to have your voice heard, but now we need to reduce the tensions and still have our voices heard. But this kind of violence is absolutely unacceptable, Pfluger said. He added that he was evacuated prior to any gunfire or people having guns pointed at them. Pfluger acknowledged that this was not exactly what he was expecting for his first week in Congress. The point is, I take it back to the Constitution. We have a right to uphold the Constitution, not just part of it, all of it. We've gone beyond that, he said. I will say that most people here are peaceful, but there were those here that took it a step too far. I'm urging everyone to disperse from the Capitol. Let's have our voices heard in a way that the First Amendment protects, Pfluger said. He added that there is law enforcement everywhere. The Capitol Police have done a phenomenal job of keeping everyone safe. We have team members from Midland and Odessa. They are all safe, so everyone is currently safe, but the Capitol is still locked down at this point in time, Pfluger said. The president gave his supporters an added boost Wednesday morning during an appearance at a rally outside the White House, where he urged them to march to the Capitol. He spent much of the afternoon in his private dining room off the Oval Office watching scenes of the violence on television. At the urging of his staff, he reluctantly issued a pair of tweets and a taped video telling his supporters it was time to go home in peace. Yet he still said he backed their cause. Hours later, Twitter for the first time locked Trump's account, demanded that he remove tweets excusing violence and threatened permanent suspension. A somber President-elect Biden, 2 weeks away from being inaugurated, said American democracy was under unprecedented assault, a sentiment echoed by many in Congress, including some Republicans. Former President George W. Bush said he watched the events in disbelief and dismay. What happened here today was an insurrection incited by the President of the United States, said Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah. There were harsh words from major business organizations and the Republican National Committee, too, suggesting uneasy relations with Trump were skidding into divorce as he leaves Washington. Our soldiers have died carrying the American flag into battle for our freedom, tweeted RNC Communications Director Michael Ahrens. To see that flag used in the name of unfounded conspiracy theories is a disgrace to the nation, and every decent American should be disgusted by it. Trump, unrepentant, had tweeted, "These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. Remember this day forever." Tensions were already running high when lawmakers gathered early Wednesday afternoon for the constitutionally mandated counting of the Electoral College results, in which Biden defeated Trump 306 to 232. Despite pleas from Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, more than 150 GOP lawmakers planned to support objections to some of the results, though lacking evidence of fraud or wrongdoing in the election. Trump spent the lead-up to the proceedings publicly hectoring Vice President Mike Pence, who had a largely ceremonial role in the proceedings, to aid the effort. He tweeted on Wednesday, "Do it, Mike. This is a time for extreme courage." But Pence, in a statement shortly before presiding, defied Trump, saying he could not claim unilateral authority to reject the electoral votes that make Biden president. Shortly after the first GOP objections, protesters fought past police and breached the building, shouting and waving Trump and American flags as they marched through the halls. Lawmakers were told to duck under their seats for cover and put on gas masks after tear gas was used in the Capitol Rotunda. Some House lawmakers tweeted they were sheltering in place in their offices. Representative Scott Peters, D. California, told reporters he was in the House chamber when rioters began storming it. Security officers made us all get down. You could see that they were fending off some sort of assault, it looked like. They had a piece of furniture up against the door, the entry to the floor from the rotunda, and they had guns pulled, Peters said. And they just told us to take our pins off, he added, referring to lapel pins members wear so Capitol Police can quickly identify them. Then the lawmakers were evacuated. Staff members grabbed the boxes of Electoral College votes as the evacuation took place. Otherwise, said Senator Jeff Merkley, D. Oregon, the ballots likely would have been destroyed by the protesters. Trump supporters posting on internet forums, popular with far-right fringe elements, celebrated the chaos. Messages posted on one turned from profane frustration over the content of Trump's speech to glee when supporters stormed the building. At least one leading figure was live-streaming video from inside the Capitol during the siege. The mob's storming of Congress prompted bipartisan outrage as lawmakers accused Trump of fomenting the violence with his relentless falsehoods about election fraud. Several suggested that he be prosecuted for a crime, which seems unlikely 2 weeks from when his term expires. I think Donald Trump probably should be brought up on treason for something like this, Representative Jimmy Gomez, D. California, told reporters. This is how a coup is started, and this is how democracy dies. Senator Ben Sasse, R. Nebraska, who at times clashed with Trump, issued a written statement saying, "Lies have consequences. This violence was the inevitable and ugly outcome of the president's addiction to constantly stoking division." The Pentagon said about 1,100 District of Columbia National Guard members were being mobilized to help support law enforcement at the Capitol. More than a dozen people were arrested. As darkness began to set in, law enforcement officials worked their way toward the protesters, using percussion grenades to try to clear the area around the Capitol. Big clouds of tear gas were visible. Police in full riot gear moved down the steps, clashing with demonstrators. Above, supporters of President Donald Trump stand outside the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday in Washington. Below, police with guns drawn watch as protesters try to break into the House chamber at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday in Washington. Jose Luis Magana, the Associated Press. J. Scott Applewhite, the Associated Press. State houses evacuate amid protests. Protesters who back President Donald Trump massed outside state houses from Georgia to New Mexico on Wednesday, leading to some evacuations as cheers rang out in reaction to the news that pro-Trump demonstrators had stormed the U.S. Capitol. Hundreds of people gathered in state capitals across the country to oppose President-elect Joe Biden's win, waving signs saying, "Stop the steal," and "Four more years," most of them not wearing masks during the coronavirus pandemic, and a few carrying long guns in places like Oklahoma and Georgia. New Mexico State Police evacuated staff from a statehouse building that includes the governor's office and the Secretary of State's office as a precaution, shortly after hundreds of flag-waving supporters arrived in a vehicle caravan and on horseback. It's the first time in the history of the United States that the peaceful transfer of power has been slowed by an act of violence, Democratic House Speaker Brian Egoff said. It is a shameful moment, and I hope that the Congress can recover soon. Chaotic demonstrations in Washington, D.C. came as Congress tried to affirm the Biden's Electoral College victory. Georgia's Secretary of State and his staff evacuated their offices at the state capitol as armed protesters gathered outside. Gabriel Sterling, a top official with the Secretary of State's office, said it was an internal decision made by Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and his team leave. We saw stuff happening at the Georgia Capitol and said we should not be around here. We should not be a spark, Sterling told the Associated Press. About 100 protesters gathered at the state capitol. Some were armed with long guns. Trump had focused much of his ire on Raffensperger in the weeks following his loss by about 12,000 votes. Trump supporters circled the state capitol building in Madison, Wisconsin, in cars and trucks adorned with Trump and U.S. flags for several hours Wednesday, blaring their horns. In Colorado, Denver Mayor Michael Hancock ordered city agencies to close buildings after hundreds gathered in front of the Capitol building for a protest against the election results. In South Carolina, protesters supporting Trump came to the State House but left before the U.S. Capitol was breached. Sunflower offers COVID vaccine by Federico Martinez. F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z at OAOA.com. They were motivated by different reasons. During the past year, Odessa resident Stephen Stewart has grieved the deaths of several loved ones who didn't survive the coronavirus. Pharmacist Brian Meyer gives Kay Ketzenberger the first dose of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine on Tuesday afternoon at Sunflower Pharmacy. The Moderna vaccine for the virus does not establish immunity until 7 to 14 days following the second dose, according to the CDC. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Hannah Horick, Communications and Development Coordinator for the Crisis Center of West Texas, for years watched her grandmother struggle with polio and lifelong paralysis because a vaccine wasn't available when she contracted polio as a child. Horick and Stewart were among dozens of residents who lined up inside and out of Odessa's Sunflower Rx Pharmacy on Tuesday and Wednesday to become the first among the general public to receive a COVID-19 vaccination. I think watching things like that, I was like, why wouldn't I take that, the vaccine? Horick said, I've gotten to see what diseases do to people 75 years later, and my mom works in a hospital, and my dad works for a pharmaceutical manufacturing company. Of course, I'm going to take the vaccine. Sunflower owner and pharmacist Brian Meyer said his privately owned pharmacy received an initial 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine on Tuesday morning and began vaccinating customers by 1 p.m. By 6 p.m., he had vaccinated 45 people. We're just a small, independently owned pharmacy, Meyer said, but we wanted to be a part of the solution to this pandemic. Sunflower Pharmacy, located at 700 North Grant Avenue, number 150, is the only independently owned pharmacy in Ector County that has received state approval to administer the COVID-19 vaccine, according to information provided by the Texas Department of State Health Services. By Wednesday morning, Meyer was distributing the last of his current vaccine stock, but another shipment is expected to arrive next week, said Brian's wife, Shavonica Meyer, who helps operate the business. Interested residents can visit or call the pharmacy at 432-606-2394 to sign up and be placed on next week's vaccination schedule, Shavonica Meyer said. The pharmacy is open 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. Several large chain pharmacies, including CVS, Walgreens, and Albertsons, have also been approved, according to DSHS. Employees at Albertsons and Walgreens in Odessa on Wednesday said they also received shipments of the vaccine on Tuesday, but did not have permission to speak to the media. AGB also is offering shots. They are awaiting orders from their company headquarters to instruct them on when their stores can begin offering the vaccinations to the public. Most frontline healthcare workers and first responders in Ector County have already received vaccinations, Meyer and other local officials say. The current group eligible for vaccination includes people 65 years or older, are people who have at least one underlying risk factor, including diabetes, cancer, or who suffer from obesity, Meyer said. Kay Katzenberger, a retired University of Texas Permian Basin professor, said she had some reservations about getting the vaccine, but decided to get vaccinated at Sunflower Pharmacy on Tuesday. If Fauci's going to take it, I'll take it, Katzenberger said, referring to Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. We don't have enough information yet on long-term side effects. That's just a fact. But I don't want to die from COVID, and there's enough new strains that dying from COVID is more likely than dying from the vaccine, she said. Staff writer Ruth Campbell contributed to this report. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Editor's note, Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers Tuesday, December 29th. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 11,543. Ector County negative, 37,671 out of 49,695 tested, with 481 pending, 181 deaths. Recovered, 9,711. Active, 1,651. ECISD daily cases, 2 students, 3 staff. U.S. cases, 20,960,096 total confirmed, and 356,005 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Adoption event. The Odessa Animal Control, 910 West 42nd Street, has scheduled an adoption event for January to help find every shelter pet a forever home. All fees are waived and pets are fully vetted. For more information, call 368-3527. On the net, tinyurl.com/YXK3YUC2. Volunteers needed. Casa de Amigos are in need of volunteers for the tax season. Volunteers are offered training. No experience needed. The Casa de Amigos Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, VITA, program offers free income tax preparation to individuals and families who make less than $57,000. Tax preparation runs from February through April. For more information, call Alfredo Chaparro at 432-682-9701 or email achaparro@casadeamigosmidland.org. Virtual hiring event. Odessa Regional Medical Center has scheduled a virtual hiring event January 19th and 20th at odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/careers. Positions available are RN ER, RN Cath Lab, RN CCU, RN MS Tele, RN House Supervisor, and Respiratory Therapist. For more information, call 432-582-8705. 342 days. For 342 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Closing prices posted $47.11, futures $50.63, natural gas $2.716. Benchmark U.S. rose 70 cents to $50.63 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. OAOA.com. Section A, page 8. Time change for council meetings pending by Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z at OAOA.com. At the request of new mayor Javier Hoven, the Odessa City Council recently agreed to change the time of its current 10 a.m. Tuesday work session meetings to a still-to-be-determined afternoon time. The council rejected Hoven's initial request to eliminate work session meetings entirely, which he says can be redundant because the same agenda items are also reviewed during regular council meetings. Work sessions are useful because they help everyone understand issues and ask questions, Councilwoman Mary Willis said during council's Tuesday work session discussion. It also gives staff time to get answers for council. They are helpful, especially to new council members who may not be as familiar with how the city operates. Willis and other council members were more open to changing the time work sessions are held. Hoven, who works mornings, asked council to consider the time change because it would better accommodate his schedule. I can do it at 10 a.m., but would need to move a lot of things to do it, Hoven told the council. Hoven said he often works in different counties, which would make it difficult to participate. New councilman Mark Mata, who also works mornings, said it would be difficult for him to attend morning meetings. His job often takes him to remote areas that have poor phone and internet reception, so it would be difficult to even participate virtually, he said. 3 or 4 p.m. would be better for me, Mata said. Denise Swanner, who is also new to council, said she would support afternoon work sessions, but acknowledged it would play havoc with her work schedule. I'll have to figure out some way to make up those work hours, she said. Council members Tom Sprawls, Steve Thompson, and Mary Willis, and Dietra White also agreed to the time change. Willis and Swanner did express concern that later meetings might drag on for hours, like Tuesday's six-hour marathon work session. Willis said she hoped that would not become the norm in the future. The mayor's request isn't unusual. It's common for meeting times or days to be changed to accommodate the schedules of newly elected officials. The council agreed to change work session times to 3 p.m. or 3:30 p.m., but is leaving it up to Hoven and City Manager Michael Marrero to determine the specific time. The new time would take effect beginning with Council's January 19th work session. Council quickly shot down Marrero's offer to stop including, quote, more mundane, end quote, issues on Council's work session agendas. Marrero said not including those unspecified mundane issues on the agenda would shorten meetings. He suggested that if Council had questions about those issues, they could approach him privately and individually to discuss, he said. Sprawls and White told Marrero his proposal lacked transparency. I want the public to know the cost of even the most mundane items the city purchases or does, White said. Sprawls added, keep those mundane items on the agenda. It doesn't take long to go through them. On the net, tinyurl.com/y5jsw538. Local news roundup. Man charged with kicking OPD officer in thigh. A 25-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly kicked an Odessa Police Department officer in the thigh after he was found slumped over in the driver's seat in a bar parking lot. Joshua Dickerson was charged with assault on a public servant, a third-degree felony, resisting arrest, search or transport, a Class A misdemeanor, possession of marijuana, a Class B misdemeanor, and driving while intoxicated, a Class B misdemeanor. The reported incident happened around 10:30 p.m. December 31st, while officers were on special assignment patrolling the parking lot of Black Gold Bar, located at 4555 East University Boulevard, according to an OPD probable cause affidavit. Officers reportedly saw a black Chevrolet Malibu that was running with a male subject, later identified as Dickerson, slumped over in the driver's seat. Officers attempted to wake up Dickerson to conduct an investigation. Dickerson didn't comply with any of the officers' commands when they had clearly identified themselves as police, the affidavit stated. Dickerson resisted officers by using force against them when they attempted to get him out of his vehicle. Dickerson reportedly used his right leg to strike OPD officer Elizabeth Frescas in her right thigh when he knew that Officer Frescas was a peace officer conducting her lawful duties. Dickerson was arrested and an inventory of his vehicle was conducted, and officers found a pill bottle that was in the driver's side door where Dickerson was sitting, the affidavit stated. The pill bottle reportedly had a green leafy substance that was known to be marijuana. The pill bottle displayed Dickerson's personal information. Dickerson was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had four bonds totaling $28,000 and posted bail on January 1st, jail records show. Man charged with sexually assaulting woman. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed that a 57-year-old man sexually assaulted a woman. Jose Daniel Marquez was charged with sexual assault, family violence, a second-degree felony. Officers were dispatched to Medical Center Hospital at 10:34 p.m. December 31st in reference to a sexual assault, the affidavit stated. Medical staff reportedly detailed that the victim's chief complaint was that her right hip was forced out of place during the sexual assault. The victim stated she was forcibly sexually assaulted by Marquez in the 900 block of Lorena Lane. The victim stated her right hip was forced out of place by Marquez as she attempted to close her legs, the affidavit stated. MCH staff did state her hip was sprained. Officers reportedly contacted Marquez in the 900 block of Lorena Lane, which he stated he did have sexual intercourse with the victim and claimed it was consensual. Marquez was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond, totaling $50,000, and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. Man charged with choking father. A 39-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly choked his father. Eliseo Garza Jr. was charged with assault by impeding breathing, family violence, a third-degree felony. The reported assault happened around 1:23 a.m. January 1st in the 1100 block of Matamoros Drive, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. Eliseo Garza Sr. and Eliseo Garza Jr. reportedly each stated they had been in an argument that escalated into violence. Eliseo Garza Sr. stated he was intentionally attacked by his son, Eliseo Garza Jr., by putting his hands around his neck and impeding his airway. Eliseo Garza Jr. admitted during the interview that he choked his father during the fight, the affidavit stated. A witness, identified as Elida Garza, stated she saw her son intentionally choke Eliseo Garza Sr. during the disturbance. Eliseo Garza Jr. was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $20,000 and posted bail on January 2nd, jail records show. OA News at OAOA.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.